Headline number two, go to crisismagazine.com. You'll find this. Thomas Schaffern. Catholic men must defend their churches. We're now being told and being threatened by a bunch of angry, ugly women and the soy boy fag hags that are going to be with them that they intend. Did anyone else other than me notice that all they're talking about firebombing and vandalizing and protesting inside of and screaming and hollering and interrupting are Catholic masses? Gee, I wonder why. Why aren't they going to the new church of the family? 12,000 square foot right down the street. There's a whole bunch of them in there. And I'm not trying to be flippant or snide or prideful or anything. It's a genuine question. Well, the answer is the demons know who their enemy is, truly. And there's only one. And now you have roused previously uninterested men to the ramparts. Again, there's always a glass half full. There's always a way to look at this to go like, well, you know what? We keep talking about God raising an army of saints. Well, here you go. I don't know if any of these guys that showed up at Saturday across from the Drag Fest in Dallas, or the ones that are going to show up on the 18th, or any of the other events that I might go to, or you might go to, or maybe you organize in your area, and you tell me, and I'll help you promote it as best I can. But at least you're making an effort. So Mr. Schaffern says, let's scroll down. He gives the narrative of two events that had previously happened in history and how great men had been rallied to the defense of the entities in question and then the defense of churches, towns, and other entities. So he writes about recently another church, this time in Brooklyn, New York, saw its tabernacle stolen and the Blessed Sacrament desecrated. By the by, anyone that participates in that, this is not going to be a very good ending for you. That's not going to turn out well. This crime comes on the heels of another story of a stolen tabernacle earlier in the same month in Katy, Texas. Such unthinkable acts of evil also coincide with recent disruptions of holy masses. After the leak of the SCOTUS draft decision to overturn Roe, advocacy groups such as Roof Sinners went to churches during Sunday Mass to disrupt the holy sacrifice. In both cases, in New York and Washington, D.C., Catholic men showed up to defend the buildings in question from the mob and prayed the rosary together. The cathedral in San Francisco certainly needed a group like this as well. Churches across the world must prepare for the appearance of such mobs, and one can find great examples of saints in the past who stood at the door to defend their churches. Perhaps one of the best-known examples of a saint barring his church comes in the story of St. Ambrose of Milan and Roman Emperor Theodosius I. The historian Theodoret describes the story in his work Ecclesiastical History, Volume 5, or Volume 17, 18. In the city of Thessalonica, St. Paul wrote a letter to the Thessalonians, if you're wondering. In the city of Thessalonica, a mob of people killed the garrison commander over the jailing of a star chariot driver. I wonder if that's the equivalent of a star NASCAR driver today. So they killed Bubba Wallace. Now, wait a minute. You said popular and a star. Scratch that. So they killed Kyle Busch. No, nobody likes that jerk. who do race fans like and is actually a good guy? What's the guy's name who gives thanks to the Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart, the truck driver guy? Johnny, that guy. Is a popular race car driver, seemingly over an accusation of rape. Enraged, Theodosius ordered the garrison in Thessalonica to murder people of the city at the circuses. Roughly 7,000 people died in the massacre. St. Ambrose took deep offense to this injustice. He called for Theodosius to do penance as King David did penance in the Old Testament. St. Ambrose also excommunicated Theodosius and barred him from even entering a church. Bold move, as Theodosius easily could have had St. Ambrose killed for this. However, Theodosius accepted Ambrose's spiritual guidance and completed his penance. And St. Ambrose eventually allowed the emperor back into the church. The incident inspired Dutch artist Anthony van Dyck to paint the famous painting of Ambrose at the door of the cathedral in Milan, refusing Theodosius entry. St. Leo the Great provides another example when he met Attila the Hun in an attempt to defend Rome from the Hunnic hordes. During the 5th century, the Huns posed a serious threat to the Western Roman Empire. In AD 455, the Huns marched on Rome after sacking Aquileia, Milan, and Pavia. Hope seemed lost, but St. Leo still marched out to persuade Attila to spare the city. Attila agreed to meet with St. Leo, and after the meeting, the Greek ruler ordered his forces to march out of Italy. The meeting between Leo and Attila the Hun became one of the great mysteries of history, as no firsthand account of the meeting survives. Many modern scholars try to make the case that St. Leo had nothing to do with Attila's decision to turn around, and St. Leo's talk of God smiting Attila would not have persuaded him. However, Attila, like most ancients, believed in powers higher than himself. So one cannot discount the possibility that St. Leo's theological arguments dissuaded the Hun king's advance. By the way, Dom Prosper Garanger found enough historical sources and Dom Prosper was very careful about his hagiography in the book, The Liturgical Year, because at the time Dom Prosper was writing, there was a great iconoclasm going on, and there were many people that were beginning the process, because we had modern scholarship, you see, of questioning the canonization and the placement and the reverence due to some saints, claiming that they never existed, the stories were not true, the stories were made up, they weren't holy men, this and that and the other. And so Dom Prosper Garanger, writing The Liturgical Year at the time, was very aware of this. He would not have written the account of St. Leo the Great the way he did if he didn't have some documentation for it. So I don't know why this Schaffer is saying that St. Leo, the way I read the story, St. Leo went out and went, Attila told the story of King David and some other Old Testament stories and said, you don't want to wind up like them. He told him that he was the vicar of Christ and that if he dared to try and bring any harm or damage to the city of Rome, the eternal city, and any of the churches therein, that God would deal with him personally. And he was so convincing that Attila, the notorious Hun, went, all right, I think I've raped, robbed, and pillaged enough for this trip. Hey, boys, turn them around, boys. And they headed back to wherever the Huns lived. Where did the Huns live? They weren't Mongolians. And all the Huns down in Hunville. They live in Hunville. In both the aforementioned cases, great Catholic saints stood in the way of perilous dangers in order to defend their churches from more serious threats than anyone in the United States faces today. Look, dude, Mr. Schaffern, I can give you dozens of examples. How about the battle, the Holy Fleet and the Battle of Lepanto? Those were not professional sailors who sailed vessels of war. They were merchant seamen, primarily. They did have a couple of war battle-hardened seamen, Don John of Austria among them, but for the most part, they weren't. There's one right there. What about the men that were rallied to march in the First Crusade? Most of them were knights or soon to be knights or noblemen, barons and what have you. This was not a gathering, a clarion call for an army full of untrained peasants. The men that marched on Jerusalem, and they had to go all the way around the Mediterranean to get there, and they had to go through like 24 towns and Muslim strongholds to get there. These were by and large, the people that lie about this and say that, yeah, along the way they raped, robbed, pillaged, and stole. No, that's the wrong crusade. There was a crusade where some of that did happen. And those men were rebuked and excommunicated, of sorts, by St. Bernard of Clairvaux. But the first crusade, that did not happen, and they financed themselves. There's a great lesson to be taken out of that. The Holy Land was in jeopardy. The precious relics, the Holy Sepulchre, were going to be destroyed. The Mohammedans were threatening to destroy them. And those men of Christendom said, not on our watch. In 1095, they marched. These things are happening. The event that will happen on the 18th in Texas is another event. I can tell you that at my own church, there are men that now sit at the back who did not sit at the back previously, who now intentionally sit at the very back, at the very rear of the sanctuary, nearest to the entrance doors of the narthex, in case one of these nutbags tries to enter or do whatever. And as I've said, they will be greeted with an equal and superior force guided by a holy hand. That is the hand of Our Lady. All of this Pride Month crap that's going on here. There's a story at the Federalist today. I didn't print it, but I did read it. If Amazon isn't woke enough for LGBTQIA++ activists, no company ever will be. You see, what the wokesters and the fagsters don't understand, or the people that are boosting them, I wear my pride this month, look at my ticker. Oh, by the way, you got to see this. Oh, good Lord in heaven, folks. The city of Miami. The Pride car, you saw it? City of Miami Police Department unveiled last week their Pride Mobile. Quick, Robin, to the Fag Mobile. If someone were chasing me in the Pride Mobile, stop! Hey, you, stop! You read a stop sign! Stop! I've got my little rainbow lights are on! Stop! If someone were chasing you in the Pride and the Fagmobile, would you stop? I mean, but they had all these men, all these male police officers gathered around. They were getting all giddy. They looked like hens, women.